Dear listeners, I'm Lauren Conlon, and before you embark on this investigative journey with me, I want to offer a sincere word of my acknowledgement and gratitude. When I, as the host, first set out on this path, I was admittedly very green. I lacked the seasoned expertise and finesse that comes with experience in investigative podcasting and reporting. However, every story has a beginning and an ending, and this podcast represents the start of my own investigative odyssey. So as you dive into these episodes, you may notice rough edges or moments where my inexperience shines through, but please know that every stumble and misstep has been a crucial part of my learning process, and I've embraced each challenge as an opportunity for growth and improvement. So I want to express my heartfelt appreciation to each and every one of you who has stuck with the story despite my imperfections, because Grant's story is important. So your support and patience have been invaluable as I've navigated the complexities of investigative podcasting. And your feedback, whether constructive criticism, words of encouragement, or maybe something that wasn't so nice, has helped me and helped shape this podcast into what it is today. So without further ado, here is Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon. I'm your host, Lauren Conlon. Last week, I featured an interview with forensic death investigator Joseph Scott Morgan, which really opened our eyes to more holes into the investigation into Grant's death. And it was extremely frustrating to hear, but just more of a reason for everyone to continue working so hard behind the scenes to get justice. And look, I don't want to pile it on for Tennessee. I already feel bad enough from my earlier episodes where I very carelessly and rudely trashed this state as a whole, and I was absolutely wrong for that. But the current cases involving young men and boys out of Tennessee right now that are being covered nationally, and even if you are a diehard Tennessean, you love your state, you have to admit these cases, along with Grant's, are not making the state look great. So we have 15-year-old Sebastian Rogers, who is still missing. Sumner County Sheriff's Office has indicated that no foul play is suspected, yet they aren't ruling it out. Yet they're checking Kentucky landfills. And this whole thing just seems like a mess. It's been over a month. Sebastian was last seen on February 25th, and his mother and stepfather, They moved out of town. I am not certain if this is temporary or not, but if Sebastian were to return home, back to his house, his family wouldn't even be there. I mean, what is going on? And I understand law enforcement does not owe us anything, but they did give a press conference, essentially providing no new info. And the best part of that press conference was actually some of the local journalists asking questions. That really helped us understand what exactly is going on. And I've seen people also comment that they don't have faith in the TBI, and this is them commenting, not me, and they specifically say this because of the case of missing 5-year-old Summer Wells. So this was 2 years ago. She's been missing for, yeah, over 2 years, and the TBI was and is in charge of that case. So similarly to Sebastian, her parents were viewed by the public as possible suspects. However, police, again, like in the case of Sebastian, said, nope, parents are cooperating and they're cleared. And it's so sad for Summer Wells. A neighbor even reported hearing a scream from Summer's house an hour before Summer disappeared. So it's been over 2 years and she still hasn't been found. And like Sebastian's parents, her father claims someone abducted her or took her. Katie Proudfoot, Sebastian's mom, has also stated this as well. Summer Wells has been missing since 2021, so it's been almost 3 years technically. I just really hope and pray that that is not the case with Sebastian Rogers. So then we have the case of Riley Strain, the college student that was found, sadly, in the Cumberland River. And this is reminding me a bit about Grant Solomon, and I'll explain why. So the last security video of Riley seen, he's fully clothed. And when his body was found, he was only wearing a shirt, boxers, and socks. So his pants and his boots were missing, and his stepdad was certain that he had to have been wearing a belt because he was a very lean kid and he always had to wear a belt to keep his pants up. So the preliminary autopsy by the Metro PD medical examiner stated, no signs of foul play. Riley Strain just tragically drowned after a night of drinking. And Riley's family is like, no, that can't be, because how the hell would his pants come loose and his belt come off without his boxers coming loose as well, especially if he was last seen fully clothed. Additionally, no water was found in his lungs. So his family requested a second autopsy, and police, they had a response for why his belt and pants were off and why no water was found in his lungs. They stated, or possibly speculated, that he was urinating and he accidentally fell in the river, so his pants were already undone, thus coming off very easily. But that doesn't explain his boxers. And as far as no water being in his lungs, they explain that as dry drowning. And for whatever reason, this is so odd to me, Riley's fraternity brothers, the friends he was last seen with, they have not reached out to the Strain family. So my point here is that I feel like his family might be being gaslit just a bit, just like Angie and Gracie, and even the rest of us, when we try to point out suspicious and conflicting evidence in Grant's death. And look, could the Metro PD be right about Riley? Absolutely, but stop making everybody feel crazy. Stop making the family feel like they are not sane or they're going out of their way for no reason. If they have a gut feeling, they have a gut feeling. And don't forget that a medical examiner technically works for the government, and obviously so do police. So generally, they want to be on the same page, medical examiners and police. But yeah, I'm not insinuating anything that there's any sort of cover up there. Oh my gosh, no. I just want to point all of that out, that it really made me feel for this family. And I hope that the Strain family finds the answers they're looking for, and they have a bit of an easier time than Angie Solomon is having. So I also want to add that in 2021, Metro Nashville reported that they were overwhelmed with bodies, and they hit an all-time high for active cases at more than 8,500 bodies and cases. And they wanted to blame the pandemic, but Dr. Feng Li, the chief medical examiner, actually admitted that a higher percentage of these bodies, that he has is from homicides and crime. So I've linked that article out in the episode notes. And I also want to point out, and this has really, really been bothering me, really, really troublesome, I found some stats, a year-end review report from 2021 about Gallatin PD as a whole. And this is not, sorry, this is not the part that really bothers me. I just wanted to note that this report said the traffic unit alone received $20,000 in grants that year, and about $10,000 went to equipment, the purchasing of supplies and equipment, which is a solid amount. So I just got to digging into some of Gallatin's financials and what they spend their money on, and I didn't find anything crazy there, but I did find a 2020 article where current third-term mayor, Paige Brown makes an interesting statement. She boasted about Gallatin PD specifically and their use of body cams, and this article, when she stated this, this was in June of 2020, a month before Grant's death. You just cannot make this up. This is what she said, quote, "Gallatin was one of the first to adopt the use of body cameras. I have had many experiences where we have had someone call and make an allegation that something happened, and viewing footage is usually at the end of any situation we have had. I am a huge proponent of body cameras. I think they protect the public, but they also protect our officers, and I think we all feel very, very good about the use of them. Last year, Gallatin Police Department officers also completed more than 7,000 hours of training." End quote. That is really interesting. So what happened on July 20th, 2020? Why wasn't any of that footage released when it was requested months later, years later? Were the body cams not worn? And I don't mean to harp on this. I know I bring it up a lot, but it's like the more I dig, the more I find where this just doesn't make sense that they wouldn't have worn them and they wouldn't have this footage. So I have an email out to Mayor Brown specifically about this. It's driving me absolutely crazy because so many things could be answered if we just had that footage. Okay, let's get back to part two of Angie's personal notes, and essentially a diary from July of 2020, the week that Grant passed away. And I'll pick up where we left off about two episodes ago. And keep in mind, these are Angie's words, Angie's thoughts, as she was encouraged to write everything down that week. And also keep in mind, a lot of what she said has been backed up by court documents. And as a refresher, she was detailing the alleged domestic violence that she and her family experienced for a good portion of their lives, and how Grant almost lost his faith. And a quick legal disclaimer, Angie does make allegations that Aaron was involved in Grant's death, but we know that Aaron has not been charged with anything. Quote, "What I didn't know was how deeply the pain of the courts not listening to him or helping him and Gracie had hurt him, and that at age 18, Grant thought that he could change his, Gracie's, and my world. He thought he could protect Gracie by testifying against his father as an adult. He felt that his testimony as a minor was not respected. He wanted to remove the burden from Gracie that she shouldn't have to carry from all the alleged sexual abuse that Grant had witnessed Aaron do to her, and Grant wanted to lock him up. Aaron decided when to bring my son Grant into this world by raping me, and he decided when to take him out of this world by murdering him. Aaron and I married in October of 2001. I was a very successful 31-year-old pharmacist. In less than 6 weeks, I since learned he had stalked me, selected me, and raped me. I became pregnant from this. He threatened my dad and my religion, Church of Christ. He said they would disown me if I raised Grant alone, which I had demanded. I was persuaded based on my family history, and I married him in a Las Vegas ceremony at the Little White Wedding Chapel. The trip, all planned by Aaron, and a ceremony that I try to forget. All I had ever wanted in life was to be a mother anyway. Grant was born on June 13th, 2002. He was beautiful. He was going to be very tall. And he very quickly showed signs of a very high intelligence. And very early, he showed signs of very high athleticism. This excited Aaron in a sense of brag-worthiness. He quickly began living through Grant's accomplishments, even at such a young age. He always pushed Grant at a young age to be bigger, faster, and stronger. It was during this time of seeing Grant's abilities that I noticed changes in Aaron, particularly when it came to Grant and his performances and abilities to perform in academia or athletics. Grant became like an object to him, a trophy, it seemed. He didn't want him to have a childhood. He wanted him to quickly become an adult and exceed and excel at rapid rates. Grant was a little boy, and he would do things that little boys like to do. Aaron did not like this because it was not, quote, purposeful and not, quote, building the machine. Aaron and I would argue that Grant would become who Grant was supposed to become, not who Aaron made him. I wanted Grant to be a child. Grant was two. As Grant got older, Aaron would control his diet, say he was fat, not good enough, he was slow, he had to eat his chicken nuggets before his fries, and he would get very angry if Grant and I did not follow the rules, which, by the way, were very stressful to follow, and there were very many rules. Aaron would find any reason to get angry at Grant, and that continued all of Grant's life. It was as if Grant should read his mind. Grant was 3 to 4 years old at this time. Things only worsened as Grant got older. Grant was 9, and in 2013, Aaron took the children right from their beds and removed them from me. Gracie had come along in 2006 the same way that Grant did. My children were my light, and I was theirs. We were inseparable. Aaron tricked them into leaving the house by telling them they were going to the donut den to get apple fritters for me. It was very early in the morning, and the children did not want to leave me. They wanted me to come. I am convinced I was drugged that night because I never heard a peep, and the kids both fought back. As I found out later, women had been claiming that Aaron drugged them in downtown Nashville after his news broadcast. He was on Channel 4 News for 15 years and allegedly raped them in their car. Once Aaron was at the donut den with them, they bought a box of apple fritters for me. This is the children. But when they got back in the car, instead of coming up on Abbott Martin Road, where we lived, he turned toward the interstate. Once on the interstate, Grant tried to jump out of the moving vehicle. Grant described that as the most painful experience he's ever felt in his life because of the sheer pain he felt when his dad grabbed his left arm and squeezed it so hard that he thought he had broken it and told him never to do anything like that ever again. From that moment on, Grant and Gracie and I were under the complete enslavement and literal control of Aaron Solomon. Aaron would withhold court documents and disallow me any time with the children, telling them I was dead for 6 months. He would carry on that I was mentally ill and not allow my medical records in the court, nor that the judge would allow them into court for the next 6 years. I fought so hard for my children and would not stop speaking the kids' truth that Judge Philip Smith eventually had me jailed to shut me up about this good man, Aaron. It was during this time that Grant was extremely controlled by Aaron. He was given a certain time each day on a random time to go have a bowel movement, listen to one song, and shower. If Grant was unable to have a bowel movement during that time that Aaron selected, Grant was not to have another bowel movement until 24 hours later. Grant feared him so much that he would not go to the bathroom at school because his father might find out. Aaron conditioned us all to fear him. It was his way of controlling us. He would take away what we love most. He took me away from my children. He took the children away from their mother. We had to obey him and stay in line in order to get to see each other ever again. Once we were able to see each other, if we got out of line, we all knew that he would remove us from one another again. So we played his game for 3 years, 100% under his control. Aaron used every form of domestic violence on the power and control wheel. For Grant, he used them all. Privilege, isolation, intimidation, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, minimizing, denying, blaming, coercion, and threats. When those forms did not work on me, I would see his ninth personality. Grant and I had named eight personalities. The ninth one was a beast. He was violent, in a violent way that I've only seen in movies, and a violent way that you cannot defend yourself against. He becomes vacant, shiny, and determined to eradicate whatever is causing him problems. The only way to snap him out of this is to scream his name over and over again. I know this because I've been there in the three times I mentioned, and I was able to snap him out by yelling his name. Grant did not know how to snap him back. Even seeing personalities 1 through 8, it was absolutely terrifying for Grant to grow up this way. He was absolutely terrified when he was younger that if he spoke out to try to get help for him and his sister, that his father would remove him from me once again. Understand, at this point, his father had only given us every other weekend, maybe 2 hours with supervised visitation, and I paid for that. It's also important to note that the judge never gave me a parenting plan or a plan to get back to my children. It was a nothing deal when I walked into the court's door. In 2016, when Grant was 14, he developed such terrible anxiety that he couldn't even take the baseball field. That was his sanctuary, and all of a sudden, it had become the worst place he could ever be in the world. He would freeze up and start to cry. His dad would make fun of him and tell him to go on, force him. Grant was having terrible panic attacks from this abuse of his father. It had carried over to the baseball field because Aaron had pushed him so hard in baseball to become a big league pitcher. Grant's body just gave up. It was at this point that Aaron allowed me more involvement in Grant's life and Gracie's life because he was at risk of losing his pro MLB pitcher. Grant was 14. Once we got to see more of each other, Grant started to improve. A coach friend helped Grant regain his momentum to enjoy baseball. From that moment on, Grant tried to protect his sanctuary from his father. He tried to play baseball for the love he found there. His dad was always pushing him, was always telling him he wasn't good enough, was always trying to come up with another way he could spend money on him in order to get him exposure for Aaron to look good. Grant tried very hard to stay away from these things and focus on the game and the players he loved, including the competitors. It was very clear to us that we were all possessions to Aaron. Aaron owned us. Even in these years, he monitored our every move. He stalked us. He lived through Grant's accomplishments. Not only was he living through Grant athletically, but also intellectually. Grant was an above 4.0 scholar in honors classes, and he was a National Commended Merit Scholar. Aaron so forced schoolwork on Grant during the years he was removed from me that Grant developed PTSD from this lifestyle of structure and trauma, but also from the way Aaron stood over him while doing his homework and demanded he be valedictorian. And at this point, Grant was a sophomore. He was 16. Grant's brain shut down and stopped supporting his intellect. Grant would almost become narcoleptic when he would open a computer, or if anything reminded him of his dad standing over him. He was terrified to not make the top grade because of what his dad would usually do, threaten him, threaten to take his truck from him. And the counselor had to step in and stop this behavior of Aaron because it was a lose-lose. After Grant completed his junior year, I spoke with his counselor and I asked if Grant would be able to even go to college. And her response was no. Because of all this pressure, Grant grew weary of performing intellectually and his best as well athletically. It was an embarrassment to him how his father hawked at him at all the games like he was a kindergartner with a camera. And at practices too, even shoot-arounds, Grant could not be his own big man on campus, even at his own high school. There was no love expressed between Grant and Aaron ever. There are no texts between them that express love, even though Grant is known for love. And although Aaron love bombs Gracie in texts, there was only detachment. Grant would often say that Aaron was strange and odd and didn't process things like other people, that he processed things like he wasn't a human, like a robot with no emotion. Grant would go on to say that he didn't think Aaron would cry, even if his mother died. Grant would often talk about how he had difficulty controlling his emotions. He had terrible anger outbursts when he was younger and had been taken from me, and coaches contacted me about these outbursts occurring on the baseball field. Later in life, Grant's emotions would come out on the basketball court and the baseball field, and he would say that they were in response to the way his dad has treated him, and some of these were very extreme. In the latter years, Grant was learning to control this and to let go of some of this anger. We worked so hard on this. Grant and I were very close, and he and I would talk about the mom stuff, and I would also have to talk to him about what dads would normally talk about. So he jokingly always said I was both. We were brutally honest in conversation and loved each other deeply. It was in 2018, during the time that he was afraid his dad would harm Gracie or himself, that Grant came to me and started worrying so much, and he had so much anxiety about getting away and protecting Gracie from him that he started experimenting with vaping. The nicotine calmed him. We worked hard to get him off of the vaping, both of us discussing that if his dad ever found out, he would kill him. We also work to put in positive coping skills for this severe anxiety that Grant had, the depression, the PTSD. Grant had such a hard life at Aaron's hands. He was never good enough. One night when Grant was found to need glasses, Grant was upset by this and how he would look at school. Aaron pulled off his belt to hit Grant across the face. I jumped in the middle of this. This was in 2013, right before he took my children. I remember the beating I got that night for jumping in between, but I would gladly take the lashes instead of my kids.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Grant would also talk about how his dad thought he was an expert at everything, and it was very embarrassing to all of us. If we were at the Vanderbilt optometrist for Gracie's eyes, Aaron thought he knew better than the optometrist. If we were at a pitching clinic, Aaron thought he knew better than the pitching coach. If we were at a doctor, Aaron knew better than the doctor. He never let us go anywhere or do anything without him, and that bothered Grant. And he also made us match him in clothing. It was at this same time Grant was trying to stand in the gap and protect Gracie from him. Grant sacrificed his own mental well-being and individuality daily to try to reason with an unreasonable narcissist psychopath to hold Aaron accountable to his boundaries that Gracie had given him. Since the, quote, incident with Grant being gone, Aaron immediately stopped respecting any of Gracie's boundaries and has since even tried to use his power to get her back by force, even today. On the other hand, Grant would stand up for Gracie, but Grant was terrified to stand up for himself and make him angry. He would always come to me to handle those potential situations for him with Aaron, even at 18. just like he did in those early morning hours the night before he died. And speaking of boundaries, both children had established boundaries with their counselor, Emily Anderson, and Aaron had agreed to follow them. They had been living by these boundaries for the past 18 to 20 months. They had been living solely with me. Gracie's boundaries were that Aaron would not see her at all or be allowed to be around her. Grant's boundaries were that he could come to sporting events if Grant participated and invited him via text. That was all they would allow him to see them for each of their mental health, as well as their emotional health and physical well-being. Grant did not spend one night with Aaron in his house after he ran away in September of 2018 for fear that he would harm him. This was reported by CASA to the Department of Children's Services and screened out within an hour. He did not spend one night with Aaron in a hotel for baseball trips, holidays, etc. And as much as he wanted to be 18, he was also terrified of it because his childhood had been stripped and he had so wanted to freeze it until he got back to me. And he did not want to be an adult and grow up. But Grant also feared that his father would realize that the testimony that he said as a minor would be the same as an adult, and that he would come back and be a threat to his father. He knew he could expose his father and all of the corruption. Grant told me about 6 months ago that time, just keep marching on, even though he tried to freeze time. He said he never got over his childhood essentially being taken from him. Aaron had rendered Grant brainless, just like he did me. As devastating as it was to see Grant in the ER that day after the incident on July 20th, I will never forget Gracie walking in and going up to him. And her first words were, "Grant, you are no longer in pain." And we both knew he wasn't. My Grant was such a deep thinker. And these things that I write about hurt him in such a deep place. That deep place where only the soul knows. Grant has testified against his father many times over the past 6 years. It was brutal for him to testify of the abuse he suffered as a child, the abuse that Gracie suffered, and how he could not protect his sister. But he and Gracie begged to be able to talk to a judge to try and help themselves. The courts pretended to listen, but they never did, and it baffled Grant that he was thought so highly of and so well-loved and had such a high IQ that the courts wouldn't listen to him. In fact, he would say that the judges or magistrates pretended to listen to him, hear him, and sympathize and empathize with him to the point that he believed they were going to remove his dad's control and hold and free them and rule in the favor of Grant and Gracie, or even said they were going to, and then didn't. And it broke him. Over those years, Aaron gave the children back to me a little bit at a time, but then took them for longer times. Over those years, he threatened them to take me. He took them over and over. Grant felt like our suffering was fuel for his father, that Aaron loved to see us in pain. So we pretended that we weren't, so as to not give him pleasure, and he became bored of hurting us. Grant's physical abuse started early, although I was unaware, until around age 9. Each time we would go to the doctor for his yearly physical, everyone acted excited to hear what height Grant was projected to be, 6'2 or 6'3. But then, when we all got home, Aaron, who stands at 5'8, would take Grant's wrists behind his back and do Indian sunburns on his arms. He would tell him no matter how big he got, he always wanted Grant to know that he could control him. This was as much a mental abuse as a physical one, and it conditioned Grant to cower to him over the years. Grant had been working so hard in counseling for 2 years on how to combat and overcome these feelings and use his own voice. Only one problem. If attacked by Aaron, Grant would have never fought back. Aaron went on to the extreme that he would control what the children said in public, to a point that when I did get them the last 2 years and 2 months, I had to teach them all the things that I would teach children who were 8, 9, and 10 years old. Again, Grant was 16, but he had no confidence to speak in public. He wouldn't make eye contact with waitresses. He wouldn't ask for something special at a restaurant that he would like or something else to drink. The kids would never go into the kitchen without saying, "Is it okay for me to be in here?" or "Can I open the cabinet? Can I get something to eat?" They would never open the refrigerator. They would never get themselves water or a drink without asking me. I had to keep trying to uncondition them that it was okay to get what they needed for themselves, for self-care, and for hunger. Each of them still asked me if they could go to the bathroom so much that we made it a running joke. "Of course you can go to the bathroom." I would laugh, and they would laugh, and go to the bathroom, but they were still conditioned to ask me. We also worked a lot on how it's okay to be who we are made to be and nothing more or less. I always told him I didn't care about accolades. I only care that he was happy, and I used to cheer for him, and I used to say, "Just be Grant." Aaron hated that the kids loved me so much. I had also uncovered a lot of dark secrets about him, and in May of 2013, Aaron had chased me down and attacked me in the master bedroom shower. Grant was a witness, standing behind his father the whole time. I got away by screaming his name over and over, but I was threatened by Aaron that if I told anyone outside the house, I would never see my kids again. I always tried to hide the fact that Grant had seen what happened. I even talked to Grant and his counselor just last year about never letting Aaron find out that he knew what happened to me that day for fear he would harm Grant. I still don't know if Aaron ever found out. I do know that in the kitchen on that morning of 2013, Grant at age 9 screamed at Aaron that when he was 6'4", Aaron would never hurt his mommy again. His voice was shredded. He was so angry and hurt, and it hurt me so badly that I dropped to my knees trying to figure out what I had to do to get us out of this hell we were in. Grant was 6'4", 210 pounds the day he died. It was only days after Aaron came into a large multi-million dollar trust and took the children from their beds. The judge said his reasoning for taking my children was mental illness, although I was sent to psychological testing and test after test, and I had nothing. I had no illness, and this was unacceptable to the judge because he knew best and he could, quote, tell I was mentally ill. So Judge Philip Smith stole my children. He stole my children for years. This devastated me. But it destroyed them. Grant never recovered waiting to get back to his mommy. I did everything that I could do. I fought that crooked system until they almost killed me. But I never got any custody back. I did get the kids back when Gracie told him she'd rather go to jail than go to Aaron's. And then when Grant ran away from his father's house in the dark of night in September 2018. Grant ran away that night because Aaron's behavior was erratic, and Grant was afraid he would hurt him. Aaron was livid that both children were not minding the judge, although it was Aaron who made the rules, not the judge. He threatened us, but we stuck together. We were a team to fight against him. It was Williamson County who did the most damage when the magistrate pretended to listen to Grant, but then did not rule in his favor, stating that Grant was 6'2 and big enough to take care of himself against his father. Even then, without seeing the kids at all, Aaron still demanded he hold full custody and made Grant see him in order to get gas money, maybe $25 or $30 a week or less, and sometimes a gift card for us to be used for food at Kroger. The gas money was only sent to Grant's card if he saw him, and the gift cards were very rare. The last gift card Aaron gave was a week before Grant died, and Aaron gave Grant a gift card to Kroger and told him it was to be used for produce. I begged Aaron not to put Grant in the middle of parental things, but he wouldn't listen. Aaron paid no child support and instead paid his attorneys to keep him out of child support court with the state of Tennessee. The kids and I were completely broke and homeless at one point and lived out of our car, and Aaron enjoyed seeing this pain and the suffering we were enduring. All the talk after Grant passed about his performance in the state tournament for Grace Christian Academy and how impeccable it was. Grant was living out of a car with his mom and sister and his dog. His coaches knew that, the school knew that, and Aaron knew that. No one did anything except support Aaron. And although this is not about me, I feel that it's important to insert here all of the PTSD that Aaron caused me, everything I worked so hard for. And he didn't care that the kids sold everything they ever had, everything they had ever been gifted or given, to keep us away from him, just to have money. They sold their Xbox, their Wiis, Nintendo. Grant would sell anything to keep us going, and it did. And we did. And things changed. And we were making it. Once I got the kids back at age 16 and 11, Grant and I would reflect about the times that his dad would tell him when he should have a bowel movement. And oftentimes, Grant would sit in our bathroom for hours at a time, home, safe with me and Gracie, just because he could. The control Aaron held over the children was even determined to control their bodily functions. Both Grant and Gracie have been abused by Aaron. Gracie's sexual abuse is well documented to no avail. Grant told only his closest confidants about what happened with him. Grant felt like Aaron had tried to confuse him sexually around the age of 9 or 10 when he first took him. Grant talks of this in shame. Some of the strange behaviors that Grant would tell me about terrified me. Grant was only 10 years old at the time. The kids were both hungry all the time as well, and they lost a lot of weight at one point. That was the point when they were not allowed to open the cabinet or even get a glass of water without permission. Aaron had his parents along with him, and they were also very complicit in carrying out Aaron's strict orders, even referring to him as the general. At 16, once safe with me, Grant started to cry about his childhood being taken and stripped by his father, and how he wanted to have a family of his own one day so he could do it right, unlike what his dad had done. He hated his father, but Aaron would flash money for baseball, and Grant saw that usage as a means to an end, a scholarship that would get him out from under his dad's control by the use of money. But disagreement occurred. Grant had just told Aaron in the weeks leading up to his death that he did not want to play pro baseball, but he wanted to start a life. This angered Aaron very much because this was not the legacy Aaron wanted him to have, so Aaron could allegedly live through it. He also told Aaron that he wanted a scholarship close to home so he could play baseball because he loves it so much, but also so that he could use the scholarship money and not need money to be under his dad's control anymore. He wanted to work through college and play ball and help Gracie and me. Aaron wanted Grant to go to Harvard, so none of this was in Aaron's lifelong plans for Grant's life that he had had since birth. He had lost control or was losing it. In the immediate weeks prior to Grant's death, their relationship intensified, and Grant had started to use his voice more like we had talked about in counseling and watched his sister start to do as well. This angered Aaron tremendously. Before, when one of the kids would get out of line, he would just send the sheriff's office to pick them up and scare them back into place. But Grant was out of the custody agreement now that he was 18, and Aaron couldn't send the sheriff's department to straighten him up now. Grant's grades were also not high enough as Aaron wanted them to be, and let me point out, he was a national merit commended scholar. Aaron was angry that he was having trouble studying and thought that he just needed to focus more and not have friends or girlfriend. He wanted Grant to isolate and drop his girlfriend, his best friends, and all fun. He wanted him to just work harder on baseball, and even then, he would text Grant and make him feel like he wasn't doing enough and he wasn't reaching his potential. It was ingrained in Grant that he would never be good enough, and no one could talk him out of it. Good enough in anything. And Grant did not drop his girlfriend or his best friends. Grant also had COVID during the summer baseball season, and the summer baseball season meant so much to Aaron for Grant's college scholarship and what school will take him. It was all Aaron talked about, and he was so angry about COVID. Because of COVID, his lungs were affected, and Grant was losing speed on the mound, which Aaron thought was laziness and lack of sleep, which leads us to WPI, Ward Performance Institute in Gallatin, Tennessee, where Grant died. This is a place for baseball players to increase their skills. For Grant, he needed to improve velocity, not to play college ball, but to play college ball at the highest level. And that is as a pitcher. He could play literally every position on the field, regardless, and was a great middle infielder. But this was not the position his dad wanted him to play. This institute was not considered highly by some well-versed coaches in the area or the United States, but Aaron would hear nothing of it. Grant wanted to go, and I saw that in his eyes and agreed for him to do the pitching performance testing. Grant and I agreed to do that. However, Grant had just been diagnosed with underlying asthma less than 7 days before, and neither I nor Grant did agree that it was good for him to go on Monday, July 20th, 2020. In fact, I had told Aaron on Friday night in a text that I was putting in text for the record that I was not for Grant doing anything exercise or athletic until we got his lungs in better control, and Grant was in agreement as well. Aaron was playing with fire. And as usual, when I texted Aaron something that he did not want to hear, I received no response. I didn't know it, but Grant was telling him the same thing in his text. He said his endurance would not be what it needed to be if evaluated professionally, that he needed to get adjusted with his lungs and a new inhaler. Aaron would not have anything of it, and with Grant continuing to say, I'm sorry, I apologize, Grant had also asked his dad if they could move the appointment to later in the day when he would be feeling better coming off of COVID and also having underlying asthma, and Aaron said they could only do these appointments at 9 a.m. In the days following the incident, I asked the employees of WPI if they could only do these at 9 a.m. in the morning, and they told me no, we can do them anytime the athlete wants. The night before, or actually early morning, around 12:30 a.m. on July 20th, 2020, Grant asked me to text Aaron and to tell him that he did not want him at the pitching performance, that he only wanted to go by himself and he could do it himself because he is a man now. And I did, and I got no response. Grant was eating pinto beans and cornbread that I had made, and we were on the couch talking, and he said, "It doesn't matter, you know, Dad'll be there anyway, and he never listens to me or my requests. He's always hawking. He has no boundaries with me," Grant said. That morning, when Grant left, he stopped at the door at 7:33 a.m., paused, and said, "Mom, I don't want to die in Gallatin." I completely freaked out. Before Grant left, I was so panicked at the statement that he made, and I told him that I would go with him, and he said, no, I'm just concerned about my lungs. He was very adamant that I not go. He said, "Dad'll be there anyway. You know he will be." I double-checked with Aaron just to make sure that he would be there. I never punt to Aaron. But I texted him and I said, "Grant does not want to die in Gallatin. Will you be there?" And his response was, "Of course I will be there." The next call I receive was from Aaron at 8:58 a.m. There had been a terrible accident and he didn't know if Grant was alive. And Grant, my big guy, my 6'4", 210-pound Division I athlete, sweetheart of a boy, did die in Gallatin, with only one witness, Aaron, his lifelong abuser, the one person he didn't trust, the one person he feared would harm him, and reported such. With tremendous sadness, Grant's mama, Angie Solomon. P.S. It was a couple of weeks after Grant's death that one of Grant's best friends, Hunter, came to see me. He needed to tell me something, and it was then that Hunter told me that Grant was planning to testify against his father to protect Gracie when he turned 18 and lock his father up. Grant was 18 years, 5 weeks, and 1 day old on the day he died. End quote. Well, that was completely heartbreaking, and as I mentioned before, much of what Angie states about their custody disputes, about allegations of abuse, this has all been documented in court records. And something that I want to point out is after the allegations of the assault in the bathroom that Grant saw, it was reported by a local radio station that they saw Aaron Solomon running down the street in a suit, in a full suit. And I have tried to get in contact with this radio host, but I talked to multiple sources who heard this stated on the radio. And in criminal profiling, obviously a sign of running is a sign of guilt. So I thought that was really interesting. And again, all of the allegations about Aaron having something to do with Grant's death or being responsible for it, clearly he has not been charged with anything, and I just want to say that for legal purposes. Some of the stuff that Angie mentioned was just so odd about the control, about him controlling when the kids got to go to the bathroom and just what they ate and how much they ate. And look, I'm a parent. I get it. I'm like, eat your veggies first before you eat XYZ. But what he did really seems odd, really, really not normal. And I want to point out or share with you something that statement analysis expert, especially in deception, Peter Hyatt, shared with me about narcissist and narcissistic behavior. He said habits or patterns can indicate an elitist personality or one that believes himself above others. And one who believes himself above the rules and consequences, the more they get away with and the more emboldened they become. So think about that. All right, I know this was a very emotional episode. It was very hard to read through all of those notes. Oh my goodness, I do feel a bit emotionally drained. But I want to thank everyone for listening, and I will be back next week with another episode of Corruption. What happened to Grant Solomon?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.